And we are on air for Bampa Racing's NASCAR weekend preview of Bristol Motor Speedway, along with our Hot Topic sound off later this morning. Now, we are doing a podcast today because there is racing at Bristol Motor Speedway on Thursday night. So we will be putting out our podcast on Wednesday afternoon, early Wednesday afternoon, so that everyone will be able to take part in hearing the preview before the races actually begin. Okay, so what we're going to do is in the first half hour, we're going to offer some updates from the ARCA West Series, and then we're going to preview the ARCA Menards and ARCA East Series race at Bristol Motor Speedway on Thursday night. It's a big race. It's a season finale for the ARCA Menards Series East. And there's also points paid for the ARCA Menards Series as well as the East Series and the Sioux Chief Showdown, which is the ninth of 10 races in that series. At the top of the hour, or the next half hour, we're going to preview the NASCAR Truck Series, and then we're going to preview the Xfinity and the Cup Series at Bristol. And then at about 90 minutes in, we're going to start our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with Crew. So definitely looking forward to that. Jay's not here yet, so hopefully he'll be here soon. Okay, so I'm going to send him a quick note because usually he's here by now. And then we'll get this party started, if you will, for our podcast. Okay, now, again, the updates from the ARCA West. The ARCA West raced last weekend, but they are not racing this weekend. They're going to be racing the Star Nursery 150 on September the 23rd. Again, that is a Thursday night next week, 7 p.m. Pacific time. It'll be 10 p.m. Eastern time, and it'll be at the Bullring at Las Vegas Motor Speedway and will be available via Track Pass on NBC Sports Gold. So definitely looking forward to that. Now, we did review their race at Portland on Monday night's show. If you haven't listened to that, you'll want to take a listen to the review of the ARCA West race at Portland. There was a little bit of controversy. Taylor Gray won the race, but there were penalties taking out two of the top three drivers and giving Taylor Gray the credit for the win. So you'll want to check out those details on our podcast. All right. And then just to kind of give you an idea of the points here for the ARCA West and how that stands right now, the ARCA West Series still has, I think, about three races left in their season. But they have quite a few drivers that are still in contention. Jesse Love has the lead right now. He is 19 points ahead of Jake Drew in second place, and then Paul Pedroncelli Jr. in third place. Paul Pedroncelli Jr. is actually tied with Cole Moore, who holds the fourth spot, based on a poll by Paul Pedroncelli. And then in fifth place is Joey East, 23 points back. So those five drivers are pretty close in points. And I know that's after six races. I believe they have three more races left. Todd Souza is in sixth, 23 points back. Then it's Trevor Huddleston, Takuma Koga, Bridget Burgess, and Bobby Hillis Jr. Bobby Hillis Jr. is 67 points back. Those 10 drivers have raced all six races of the ARCA Menards Series West. So that is pretty cool that they are definitely in the running here in the next three races. Now, I want to go to the rest of the schedule here for the ARCA Menards Series West as well, because the West Series, as I mentioned, they're not done yet. They still have quite a bit of racing to go. The schedule is going to slow down just a little bit because they've raced quite a bit throughout the summer. But the next race is, again, at the Bullring in Las Vegas on September 23rd, October 9th. They'll be racing at All-American Speedway. And the season finale is November 6th at Phoenix Raceway on the national stage with the season finale for the NASCAR Top 3 Series. So, again, it's three more races, September, October, and November for the ARCA West to determine who their champion is. Now, next up, we are going to be previewing the ARCA Menards Series East and the ARCA Menards Series at Bristol. But keep in mind, that race is going to be the season finale for the ARCA Menards Series East. So definitely looking forward to them racing at Bristol tomorrow night. I still am not hearing from Jay here. That's highly unusual. I know he was planning to be here, so I am going to send him a quick text here because it's just not usual for Jay not to be here. He's usually here and on time for these shows. So I suspect it might have something to do with the fact that we were starting at 10 a.m. Eastern time. So we'll see if Jay is going to show up here. And I'll tell you a little secret. It is his birthday today, so maybe he started an early celebration of his birthday. So definitely looking forward to talking with him. Okay, so anyway, we'll look forward to hearing from him shortly. So hopefully he'll call in here in a few minutes. And I apologize for the interruption here. So, yeah, I think he got confused with what time we were starting. So we'll look for him to call in. He said give him a minute to call in, and hopefully we'll hear from him shortly. Again, we're looking forward to this race at the ARCA Menards Series. Again, it is a combination event because these guys are going to be racing. These guys are going to be racing the ARCA Menards Series. They're going to get points in the Bush's Best 200. The ARCA East is going to be their season finale to determine their champion for the season. And the Sioux Chief Showdown, this is the ninth event of their 10-race series at Bristol Motor Speedway. It's just one race, but three different series on the line here for the Busch Beans 200. That race, again, is tomorrow night, September the 16th. It will be 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Bristol Motor Speedway. And fans can watch this one on Fox Sports 1 on Thursday night. And so that tells you just how big this event is, with three series, one race, and one championship on the line, the final race for the ARCA Menards Series East. So definitely looking forward to that. We now have Jay Huseman here, and I just want to make sure we do this. It was kind of light there, but did you hear it, Jay?
I did hear it. Thank you so much. I'd say as you get older, you forget things, but I just messed up. I thought we were doing 10 Central, 11 Eastern, so that was my bad.
I thought that might have something to do with it. So I'm going to go ahead and play this again. I think I've turned up the volume here so everybody can hear it. Okay, it is Jay Huseman's birthday, so I hope everybody sends him a birthday wish, and I hope all your wishes come true, Jay.
Well, thank you so much. I know I've already had a ton of messages. I talked to my dad already this morning, so been a busy morning for sure.
Okay. Well, I've done the update for the ARCA West series, and now we're getting into the ARCA Menards series and the ARCA Menards series East, as well as the Sioux Chief Showdown. They haven't put up the pit box yet, so what we'll do is go over the entry list, just talk about who's going to be in this race. And it's actually a pretty large list, Jay, and we'll start from the bottom and work our way up here.
All right, give me 1 second while I get that loaded. Daniel Dye made a comment about that. I think there were 30 entries maybe.
Yeah, there's quite a few people. And just a programming note here, we had Dean Thompson on our radio show on Monday night. If you haven't heard his interview, you'll definitely want to go back and listen to that podcast. He's on during the third half hour of the show, if that helps you cue it up. And he really gave us a nice interview. I look forward to maybe having Dean back again somewhere down the road here.
Well, I hope so. You're right. It was a great interview. I'm glad you all got to do that. I did listen to it. All the drivers we've had on, I mean, it's always such a pleasure. I know we've had struggled here lately getting guests on, but always a pleasure to have these drivers on.
It certainly is. Okay. Are you ready, Jay?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, we'll go from the bottom up again. There's close to 30, if not 30, different drivers that we're going to highlight here. And we'll start from the bottom up here.
The 06, that's going to be Don Thompson out of Carlisle, Pennsylvania, on the Wayne Peterson Chevrolet. George Gimbert going to be the crew chief. And then Tony Constantino, we've seen him around, on the Hillenburg Toyota with Richard Garvey. In the 01, coming out of Manola, Florida.
Okay. And in the number 97 this weekend is Jason Kitzmiller. Is from Maysville, Kentucky. He'll be driving a Chevrolet for Cody Rohrbaugh, and Todd Myers will be his crew chief. Terry Carroll will be the crew chief for Justin Carroll in the number 91 Toyota for that team, and he is from West Point, Virginia.
In the number 87, that'll be Meadows of Dan, Virginia driver Charles Buchanan in the Charles Buchanan Ford. Craig Wood going to be the crew chief. And then Sammy Smith, one of the championship contenders from Johnston, Iowa, in a Coy Gibbs Toyota in number 81. Jamie Jones will be the crew chief for that machine.
Yes, and Sammy Smith, this is the season finale for him to win the championship. He's currently in the lead, but he has some other drivers that would love to upstage him here at Bristol. And we'll see what happens at the race on Thursday night. Okay, next up we have Andy Jakowiak from Tonawanda, New York. He'll be driving his own car this weekend with Mike Dayton on top of the pit box. Tommy Baldwin will be on top of the pit box for Marie Benevento's Toyota, the number 74, driven by Mason Diaz from Manassas, Virginia.
Not a New Brunsville, Texas. That'll be Parker Chase in the 55. That's a Venturini Toyota. Dave Liner is the crew chief. And then Seth Smith, we've seen him with Joey East on the 54. Joey comes out of Madero, California, and that'll be in the DGR David Gilliland Ford.
In the number 48 is Brad Smith driving for his own race team, the Chevrolet, with Leo Kreiger as his crew chief, and he hails from Shelby Township, Michigan. Thad Moffitt will be behind the wheel of the number 46 Ford for the Johnny Gray team, with Derek Smith as his crew chief.
The number 44, that'll be Stephanie Moyer out of Shepton, Pennsylvania. That's in a John Farrier Toyota. Owen Smith is the crew chief. And out of Fredericksburg, Virginia, the 42, that is Connor Jones. It's a Bruce Cook Chevrolet with Sean Samuels as the crew chief.
Okay, and we've had him on our show in the number 35, Greg Van Alt. For his own race team, he hails from Anderson, Indiana. He'll be driving a Ford with crew chief Jim Long on top of the pit box. Mark Rett will be on top of the pit box for his team, the number 30, driven by Max Gutierrez. He'll be driving that Mark Rett Ford this weekend. He hails, of course, from Mexico City, Mexico.
And coming out of Tucker, Georgia, that's going to be the Sieg Operation RSS Racing Chevrolet. Kyle Sieg will be behind the wheel of the number 28 with Tony Wilson as the crew chief. And then Wayne Peterson, crew chief in the David Richmond Toyota number 27. That'll be Zachary Tinkle out of Speedway, Indiana. What better town name can you come from than Speedway, Indiana?
Perfect. Okay, and then last year's ARCA West champion in the number 25 for Venturini Motorsports, he'll be driving their Toyota, the number 25 again, and Kevin Reed is his crew chief. Now, in the number 23 for the Stacy Holmes Chevrolet is Sam Mayer from Franklin, Wisconsin. Shane Huffman will be his crew chief.
Then for the GMS, Murray Gallagher Chevrolet, the 22, that'll be Jack Wood. He comes from Loomis, California. Chad Walter going to be his crew chief. And another Chad crew chief in for the Gallagher Chevrolet, that'll be Chad Bryant on the number 21 with Daniel Dye as the driver coming out of Dillon, Florida.
Okay. Okay, now then we have in the number 20, another championship contender in the, actually the next two are both championship contenders in the ARCA Menards Series. Corey Heim in the number 20 Venturini Toyota from Marietta, Georgia, with Shannon Rush on his pit box. And Mark McFarlane will be on the pit box for the number 18 Toyota, driven by Ty Gibbs from Huntersville, North Carolina.
And Chad's a popular crew chief name. Chad Johnston, crew chief in the David Gillen Ford number 17. Driver's going to be young Taylor Gray out of Mooresville, North Carolina. And then another Georgia driver, Atlanta, Georgia's Drew Dollar in the Venturini Toyota number 15. Now it'll be crew chief by Bill Venturini himself.
Okay. And next up, let's see. Next up, we have D.L. Wilson from Mark, Texas. He'll be driving the Hillenburg Toyota, number 12, with Dick Mulhaney on the pit box. And Jeff McClure will be on the pit box of the other Hillenburg car. It will be the number 11, driven by Mason Mingus from Brentwood, Tennessee. He'll be driving a Ford for Andy Hillenburg.
The number 10 is going to be Xfinity Series Rookie of the Year contender, Jade Buford, getting some more seat time. Comes out of Nashville, Tennessee, driving a Hillenburg Toyota. Mike Schroof as the crew chief. And Jeremy Petty on the Eric Caldwell-owned and driven machine. Caldwell in the number 7 comes out of Piedmont, Oklahoma.
Okay, the next two cars are Rev Racing Machines, and Roger Carruth from Washington, D.C. will be behind the wheel of the number 6 Chevrolet with Glenn Parker as his crew chief. Steve Plattenberg will be on top of the pit box for the number 2 Chevrolet, driven by Nick Sanchez from Miami, Florida. So I believe we covered everybody there, Jay.
Yeah, that is quite the field, especially for the East Series finale here. And I think we got, three left in the ARCA Menard Series. So a lot of shifting and things going to be happening here as far as these points and championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the Busch Beans 200 at Bristol Motor Speedway is the 18th race of this season's schedule. It's the final race of the ARCA Menard Series East season and the ninth round of the Sioux Chief Showdown. And again, it will start at 6:30 p.m. Eastern this Thursday, September the 16th. The race will be broadcast on Fox Sports 1 with a live stream available on the Fox Sports app, as well as radio coverage on MRN and Sirius XM Channel 391, and the online channel of 981. Live radio coverage is available for the Busch Beans 200. You can also get information at arcaracing.com at their Race Central, as well as their radio coverage. This is going to be a big one, Jay, on Thursday night.
All right.
No.
As I say, can you pick one favorite out of all that?
No way. This is really pretty exciting. Okay.
All right. Which series do you want me to start with for the standings?
Let's start with the ARCA Menard series and kind of build up to the ARCA East here.
All right. For their championship, the ARCA Menard series has come down. It's been a battle, a two-driver battle all year long. See if this will load. Why is that? There we go. Between Corey Heim, mentioned it, Corey Heim and Ty Gibbs. Gibbs does currently have that little bit of an advantage, up to a 16-point lead now. Through the 17 races, Gibbs has 9 wins, 16 top fives, as well as 16 top tens, 8 poles. He's led a total of 1,238 laps. His average finish is 3.2. Corey Heim right there with him, 6 wins, 14 top fives, all 17 top tens. He's led 405 laps. His average finishes, and like I said, I think this is the biggest this points differential has been throughout the year, and it's at 16 points.
Yeah.
Third through fifth, Thad Moffitt, Nick Sanchez, 15 races each at minus 257 and minus 278. So even with 3 races remaining, like I said, this one's pretty much between the two of Gibbs and Heim. But then you got fifth place, Brad Smith, made 16 starts at minus 384. There might be some more shuffling there amongst the top 10, but the championship going to come down to Gibbs or Heim.
Yes, indeed. And you know, Jay, the Bristol Motor Speedway can really shake things up. We've seen some different winners in these series. There for a while, it was just Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim winning. But lately, we've seen some different winners in this series. And I think when they come out of Bristol Motor Speedway, there might be a few shakeups here.
There could be, and you mentioned it's race number 9 in the Sioux Chief Showdown, so that one's getting down to it as well. 2 races left there, this being one of them. Gibbs, again, has the points lead over Corey Heim at 338 to 325. Now, this one, there's several drivers that have made all 8 starts all the way through 6th place, Brad Smith. So this one could be a huge factor, especially with 30-some drivers in this event. But for the Sioux Chief Showdown, 5 of Gibbs' wins have come there, giving him the lead at 338. Corey Heim has picked up 2 wins at 325. Then Thad Moffitt and Nick Sanchez at 293. So they're only 45 points back from the lead. Taylor Gray at 236 and Brad Smith at 212, the 6 drivers that have made all 8 of the Sioux Chief Showdown starts. So that one's been real interesting. I know we still got the same 2 at the top, but this one's a little bit more competitive, if you will.
Mm-hmm. It is. And actually, Taylor Gray did miss a couple of those races. So that's pretty amazing that he's up in that top 5 group with 2 fewer races.
Then we talked about this. The championship is going to conclude for the Camping World, ARCA Menards East, and that will be, mentioned the points leader, Sammy Smith, seven races, three wins, six top fives, six top tens. Daniel Died. His win was in the regular ARCA Menards series, so he doesn't have the win in the East series, but he has two top fives and all seven top tens, is 24 back. Then is Mason Diaz in third at 33 back, Joey East at minus 38, Max Gutierrez at minus 40, and sixth place Raja Karuth at minus 45. Those six drivers all have seven starts. It's one of those, you hate to see it. Daniel Dye could still mathematically win, but he'd need some help, and it would be some bad luck on the part of Sammy Smith.
Yes, it would. But a lot of things can happen at Bristol Motor Speedway, as we well know. And I couldn't think of a better track to have a season finale than Bristol Motor Speedway for this ARCA Menards Series East. What are your predictions for these three races? For these three events,
It's really interesting to see Sammy Smith and Daniel Dye. Like I mentioned, that one's not a mathematical issue yet, but realistically it is. But with such a big field, as well as in a combination with the ARCA Menards series, you got mentioned Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim have been the dominant two there. You're looking at it becoming a points race, if you will. Not to say that Sammy Smith or Daniel Dye, any of these drivers can't win that Bristol race. And we know, we've seen it in the past, especially on the short tracks, Corey Heim and Ty Gibbs got a tit-for-tat thing going of who owes who a bump and run and whatnot. So somebody could come out of this and really capitalize on it. We could see a big shakeup even as far as this 24-point gap here on the east side.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, something could happen to Sammy Smith at the very beginning of the race and put him out of the race. I'm not wishing him bad luck. I hope he wins the race. I really do. But I just know that things can happen at that track. So no bad juju there. It's just that things can happen at this track, and we just want to forewarn everybody that don't miss this race, because a lot can happen that can change all of these things that we've been talking about here with the point standings. Same thing could happen to Corey Heim or Ty Gibbs. Bristol is just one of those kinds of tracks. These guys are smart, though. I look for them to drive very smartly on the track this weekend. I think Sammy Smith's going to walk away with the championship when everything is said and done. So we'll see what happens. But as far as the race winner, we've got a lot of different people that are in this race. Who's your prediction for the winner of the race, Jay?
You know, actually, I kind of got to lean towards Sam Mayer. I know he's in the Stacy Holmes machine and not with GMS like he has been in the past, but we know he's got the experience there. He stepped up and won a Truck Series race there as well, kind of out of the blue, if you will, in one of his first starts in the Camping World Truck Series. So if you're not going to go with the top two championship favorites of Gibbs and Heim, I think Sam Mayer is one that could sneak in there and do it. But like you said, it all depends on those first laps. We'll have to see how much these drivers are driving to protect their championship hopes. You know, Daniel Dye knows he's going to go out, win the race, and let the cards fall where they may. You know, that's his option, because he needs that help from the negative side from Sammy Smith. So Sammy Smith can come away with a top five finish and still lock up that championship.
Yes, indeed. And I would have to agree with you that Sam Mayer could certainly be a spoiler in this race. I think that Corey Heim and Ty Gibbs have learned quite a lot this year in their racing experience. Ty, we know, has raced some of the Xfinity Series races and done extremely well on tracks he's never raced on before. Corey Heim has raced in the Truck Series this year. Bristol Motor Speedway is going to be another good experience for both of those drivers. And I think they will give Sam Mayer a run for his money, if you will. And this is going to be a fun race to watch. Please don't miss this race, because it is on Thursday night for a reason. There is just so many things that are on the line here in this series. And these drivers want to be the driver that come away with a championship, that come away with a win, that put themselves in position to win that Sioux Chief Showdown championship. So the ninth race of the Sioux Chief Showdown event, the next race at Salem Speedway is going to be their season finale for that Sioux Chief Showdown.
Yeah, so many things, especially, and you mentioned it, three different championships that they're looking at. One of them, the E-Series, going to be complete, the Sioux Chief Showdown, coming down to the final two events, and then the Arca Menard Series down to three events. So there is a lot on the line here in this one event. And I think the biggest factor there is the number of cars, and I think I miscounted. I think it's actually 32 entrants from what we read off that entry list. So that can be a huge factor if you do have that misstep of how many entries are in that race.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's going to be a factor at a track like Bristol. So these guys are constantly hitting that brake, and who knows how the brakes are going to hold up for this event. I know it's 200 laps, but these cars are not the same kind of cars as they're not going to be as sturdy as the cars that are driven in the East driven in the Xfinity or the Cup Series. So that's going to be something to watch at this event as well. Okay, we are past the half-hour mark, which means that it is time for us to move on to the Truck Series. Now, the Truck Series, we already know a little bit of information here for the Truck Series. They'll be racing at Bristol Motor Speedway again Thursday night, big race night on Thursday night, which is why we're doing this as a broadcast, as a podcast. That race will take place at 9 p.m. Eastern. They'll be racing 200 laps, and they are going to be three stages. The stages will end on lap 55, lap 110, meaning that both of those stages are 55 laps, and then 90 laps for the last stage that ends on lap 200, the end of the race. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1 as well as MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Now, Sheldon Creed in the number two, he's won the first two races in their first round of 10, and he will start from the Kometic Gasket pole for the UNOH 200 presented by Ohio Logistics. Now, the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race at Bristol Motor Speedway, second place will be the number four of John Hunter Nemechek, and then followed by Todd Gilliland, Matt Crafton, and Stuart Friesen to round out the top five. And the next five are Grant Infinger, Chandler Smith, Carson Hocevar, Zane Smith, and Austin Hill. The entry list, we can go ahead and go over that if you want the lineup. Let's do it as a lineup because we've already gone through the top 10. Let's go ahead and start with row six for this race.
All right, let me see if I can find. I was looking for, is that one through J-Ski? Do they have it up? The line, there it is.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, now I got entry list. I don't have lineup.
If you go to the race page, they've got the lineup link there.
All right.
Brad, I'll just say this. Brad Keselowski actually holds the track record and the Camping World Truck Series at this track. On August 21st of 2014, he had a time of 1 hour, 9 minutes, and 35 seconds. His speed was his average speed was 91.919. So that's pretty cool that he still holds that record since 2014 at Bristol.
All right. Well, I'll start down at the bottom then, row 20. So we're going to have 40 trucks here at Bristol. That's going to be a lot of trucks on that half mile. The starting 40th will be Ray Cicerelli in the number 49. And then we mentioned the number 32, that's going to be Sam Mayer.
The double duty night for him, because he'll also be racing in that ARCA Menard series and then jumping into the truck to race the truck series. In row 19, we have in the number 33, C.J. McLaughlin, and in the number 4, Corey Roper.
Row 18, there we got Jennifer Jo Cobb in the number 10 and Taylor Gray in the DGR 17, another one doing double duty.
Exactly. And in row 17, we have Clay Greenfield. He'll be in the number 11. And Howie DeSavino the third is back in the number 3 this weekend, or on Thursday night, I should say.
All right. Regular, we got Timmy Hill in the number 56 and then Tate Fogelman in the number 12. That's row 16.
In row 15, we have Doug Kobe driving the number 24, Mayhew's Tool Chevrolet, and Dawson Cram in the number 41, B. Water Chevrolet.
Moving up to row 14, Josh Reum in the cell phone Toyota, the number 34, and Spencer Boyd in the Easy Poles Flagpole Chevrolet, starting in the 27th position with that number 20 truck.
In row 13, in the number 40 for Marquis Spa Chevrolet is Ryan Truex. And in the number 45 is Lawless Allen. He'll be back again for the AutoParkIt.com Chevrolet.
Rookie Chris Wright is going to help make up row 12 with rookies. He's in the 02 Wright Chevrolet, Wright Chevy Chevrolet. And then another rookie, the number 1, Haley Deegan in the Toter Engine Ice Ford for DGR.
In row number 11, we have Danny Bone in the number 30 for Rust-Oleum Toyota, and Tanner Gray will be in the number 15 Ford Performance Ford.
Row 10, getting to the top of the list, the number 9, that'll be Colby Howard in the Grant Country Malt Chevrolet, and Chase Purdy with the BamaBuggies.com Chevrolet number 23, and that's the 19th starting spot.
Row number 9, we have in the number 26, Lyuna Chevrolet, Tyler Ankrum. And in the number 25, Rackley Roofing Chevrolet is Josh Berry.
Row number 8, the 16th spot, that'll be the number 22 of Austin Wayne Self and the Go Texan AM Technical Solution Chevrolet. And the Incredible Bank Toyota, number 19, that'll be Derek Krause starting in the 15th spot.
Row number 7, Parker Kligerman is back in the number 75, Lucas Bean Ford Country USA Toyota. And Johnny Sauter will be driving his number 13, FarmPate.com Toyota.
Row number 5, the top 10, the 16th.
No, row number 6.
The 6th. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed row number six, the 12th spot. That'll be Drew Dollar in the KBM number 51 Sunbelt Rentals Toyota. And then Ben Rhodes in the Bombardier Learjet 75 Toyota number 99.
Okay. Now, we've already covered these, but we'll go ahead and cover them again because we're giving you a little bit more information about each driver. But in row number 5, the number 16 will be driven by Austin Hill in the Aisin Toyota. And in the number 21, Diecast King Chevrolet is Zane Smith.
Row number 4, the outside, that'll be the ace starting spot. The number 42 of Carson Hosovar, rookie in the playoffs, CircleBDiecast.com Chevrolet. And Chandler Smith, another rookie that made the playoffs. That's the number 18 for Cobblish Motorsports. And he's in the SafeLite Auto Glass Toyota.
Okay. Go ahead and do the next one. I've got to send a message here real quick.
All right. Now, this one, Ed, the playoff drivers are all starting towards the front, but it is set based off of actual owner points. So the third row, sixth starting spot, is the 98 of Grant Enfinger, champion Curb Records Toyota. And then Stuart Friesen in the number 52, Halmar International Toyota. That'll be your fifth spot. Fourth spot, your top two rows. The fourth spot will be the number 88, Matt Crafton, the Great Lakes Menards Toyota. And the Speedco Ford, number 38, will be Todd Gilliland for Front Row Motorsports. And your front row here in the Truck Series, talked about it, the championship, top two championship contenders right now. John Hunter Nemechek will be in the number four Mobil 1 Toyota for Kyle Busch Motorsports. And then Sharon mentioned winning the first two races so far in the playoffs, Sheldon Creed in the LiftKits4Less.com number two Chevrolet.
Okay, so there you have it. That is the lineup for this group this weekend, the Camping World Truck Series. There is some Goodyear tire notes here that we can cover. It's, again, they'll be racing 500 laps over 266.5 miles. Again, it's race number 29. Okay, the storyline for Bristol presents a triple challenge for NASCAR teams when it comes to Bristol Motor Speedway, because teams are going to face a trio of challenges. First, it's the high banks around the track creating higher speeds and loads than any other. It's relatively flatter, short track. These teams will race late in the season, so including last week's stop at Richmond Raceway and the upcoming Martinsville Speedway. Second, Bristol has a full concrete surface, which wears tires pretty aggressively when the track is green with no rubber buildup on it. So Goodyear designs its tread compounds for Bristol to take the right amount of rubber to create multiple racing grooves, but not so much that it upsets the cars and the trucks that are on the track. Third, Goodyear, NASCAR, and the track operations staff really work together to apply the PJ1 grip compound to the lower 4 feet of both sets of corners for this weekend's races. This will speed along the development of a second racing groove, giving drivers an alternate lane in order to pass. Back to the concrete tire setup, teams in all three of NASCAR's National Series will run on the same tire setup at Bristol this week. This is the same combination of left and right side tires that teams in all three of these series ran at Bristol in 2020. It's the only track in which the Cup teams will run either of these two tire codes in 2021. Unlike on most NASCAR ovals, 1 mile or less in length, in which teams generally do not run inner liners in their tires. Teams are required to run liners in their right side tires only at Bristol. The air pressure in those inner liners should be 12 to 25 PSI, greater than that of the outer tire. So that's just some information for the tire. You want to give the information here as far as I'm sorry, the Camping World Truck Series race is going to be race number 18 for that series. They're racing 200 laps or 106.6 miles. We'll cover the other series when we get to those series. Let's go ahead and talk about the tire itself and the tire limits. Jay, are you still there?
Yeah, I was where you were pulling that from, because that was all it had under the Goodyear Fast Facts for Bristol.
Okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to go ahead and cover it then. The Goodyear, they'll be running Goodyear Eagle Speedway radials. The Cup has 10 sets for the race, Xfinity 4 sets for the race, and the Truck Series have 4 sets for the race. Now, the left side code is the D4860. The right side code is D4962. The left side circumference is 2,223 millimeters. That's 87.52 inches. The right side is 2,250 millimeters. That's 88.58 inches. The minimum required inflation for the left front is 20 PSI. For the left rear, it is 18 PSI. For the right front, it is 45 PSI. And for the right rear, it is 40 PSI. So there you have it. For this Bristol Motor Speedway 2021.
With that, notice when you read that, it says the minimum recommended inflation. Different teams do different strategies with that, and that sometimes is what leads to some of these issues at Bristol Motor Speedway. Teams maybe not adhering to that recommendation.
Exactly right. So please keep that in mind. That's sometimes what causes them to blow out their tires, is that they push that PSI beyond the recommended limit, and they end up using up their tires much more quickly than if they use the recommended limit. It's that risk versus reward that everybody looks for.
And I know starting out on that lower and letting them build up that pressure gives you that advantage. But you, like you said, there's that risk with it of where it costs you, depending on what the tire does. And we've seen it in the past. Team crew chiefs think they're making the right call and trying to give their driver that advantage, but it ends up biting them in the end.
It really does. It really does. Is there any quick news we can cover, Jay, in the Truck Series specifically?
For the Truck Series, I know we had mentioned when we did the driver lineup there, a couple of drivers just looking at the entry list and the lineup. I'm trying to think where it was driving for Spencer Davis. They had put
in
there.
Clay Greenfield's going to drive for Spencer Davis.
Greenfield,
Motorsport.
There we go.
Yeah.
Several different drivers in the lineup, which again I think is a great mix. I know it's a playoff race, especially the cutoff race for the Camping World Truck Series round number one. But we talked about it with Sam Mayer winning last year, picking up that win. I think that really adds some intrigue to this Truck Series race.
Yeah, I think this is their elimination race, Jay. They're going to eliminate two drivers after this race.
It is for round number one, indeed, the elimination race.
Yeah.
And right now, the ones on that line are Zane and Chandler Smith. 20.52 for Chandler Smith. Zane Smith at 20.59. They don't have a big gap up to Austin Hill in eighth at 20.64. Carson Hocevar, 20.67. But again, it's, you can't do it on your own. Even a good run, if the driver in front of you has a good run, you don't gain many points.
Exactly right. And at the top of those lists, I think two or three of those drivers have already secured their spot into the next round. We know Sheldon Creed has with his two wins, but so has John Hunter Nemechek, I believe.
Yes, John Hunter Nemechek has, and that goes back to the 50 playoff points he had built up throughout the regular season with his 5 victories. So following their second race, he was locked in on points. So that does give them a little bit more freedom and breathing room, and that's why they worked so hard during the regular season to have that cushion and those points in the playoff bucket.
And real quick, how close are those guys at the cutoff line? Who are their competitors?
Okay, like I said, Chandler and Zane Smith at 20.52, 20.59. So you're talking 5 points up to Austin Hill, 8 points up to Carson Hocevar. Todd Gillen only another 3 up. Ben Rhodes is another 4 up. So that's Ben Rhodes, 5th through 10th, is points-wise where you're really looking at it being an issue. Now, the win and you move on, I mean, that's a lock. So that's where the win becomes so important. I think for Zane Smith and Austin Hill, that's the best thing they can look at, because if not, even if you get second or third, then you're dependent on how many points your other drivers made or didn't make. And again, it would go back to some unfortunate luck for somebody else that is going to move you on.
And then there's those drivers below the cut line. Well, actually, they're racing for that number 11 spot.
And that's where you find Sam Mayer, Derek Krause, Grant Infinger. And we know he gets to start up there in the mix with those top drivers based on the owner points that he had collected. Unfortunately, did not get the waiver for the playoffs, missing one race, but has shown all year long he's capable of running in the top five, top ten.
Exactly right. Okay, next up we're going to cover the Food City 300 that is for the Xfinity Series at Bristol Motor Speedway, 7:30 p.m. on Friday, September the 17th. Their stages are 85 and 130 laps. They'll be racing a distance of 150 miles. Let me go to that race page because I can give you a little bit more detail. They are the radio coverage. It's 300 laps. The radio coverage, TV coverage will be on NBC Sports Network, and radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. For the first time this season, Noah Gragson is going to start from the pole for the Food City 300 for the Xfinity Series. And his junior motorsports teammate, Justin Allgaier, will start alongside him on the front row. Then it will be Ty Gibbs in third, Daniel Hemric, and Justin Haley rounding out the top five. The next five drivers will be Harrison Burton, Jeb Burton, Riley Herbst, Austin Cindric, and A.J. Allmendinger. Now they complete the top 10. Based on points, Timmy Hill in the number 13 will not be able to compete in this event. So let's go ahead and cover the rest of the lineup here, starting on row 20, Jay.
All right, down to row 20. Mentioned Timmy Hill, the one that is not eligible. So the 40th spot going to go to the 74 Chevrolet of Bailey Curry. And the number 52, that'll be Greg Galding in the Pan American UFC Prism Chevrolet.
Okay, and row 19 in 38th position in the Black Oak Contracting Toyota is Chad Fincham in the number 61. In the number 15 is BJ McLeod for Team JDMotorsports.com Chevrolet.
Row 18 on the outside, spot 36, as a regular guest here on Fan for Racing, the 07 of Joe Graff Jr. with his Bucked Up Energy Chevrolet. And then the number 4, Landon Castle for Team JDMotorsports.com.
Okay, and row number 17, in the car number 17, is Carson Ware for Pounds Property Management Chevrolet. And Spencer Boyd will be in the number 90 for DGM Racing Chevrolet.
Row 16, here you got the 31 of Sage Karam in the Bomarito Automotive Group Chevrolet, and Ty Dillon in the R Sports number 23 Hometown Lender Chevrolet.
Row number 15 and the number 48 is Jade Buford, a rookie. He'll be driving the Big Machine Spike Cooler Chevrolet. And in the number 0 this weekend for Forever Lawn Chevrolet is Jeffrey Earnhardt.
Row number 14 outside will be spot 28. That'll be the number 6 of rookie Ryan Vargas in the Voyager Chevrolet. And in the number 5, Stefan Parsons in the JF Electric Chevrolet.
Row number 13 in the number 99 for Sokol Digital Chevrolet is Matt Mills. Driving the number 78, David's Electric Chevrolet, is Jesse Little.
One of my favorite paint schemes, the Whataburger Toyota, the number 66, David Starr. I'll start on the 24th spot outside row 12. To his inside, we've seen a lot out of him lately. Tommy Joe Martin's in the number 44, Gilreth Farms Red Angus Chevrolet. That's a food row right there.
There you go. In row number 11 on the outside, in the number 8, Tire Pro Chevrolet, is another rookie, Sam Mayer. And in the number 26, Snap Mobile Shop Alternate Toyota, on the inside is Brandon Godovic.
All right, returning to the R Motorsports 02, that'll be Brett Moffitt in the Freight Auction Chevrolet. And then Kyle Weatherman in the number 47, sponsored by Axe Crossbows, and he's in the Chevrolet.
Row number 9 on the outside in the number 92 is Josh Williams for Work Pro Tools Chevrolet. And in the number 2 in the Crossley Furniture Chevrolet is Maya Snyder.
Row number 8, that'll be Brandon Jones in the JGR number 19, a Yee Toyota. And Michael Annette, Junior Motorsports driver number 1 in the PFJ Thank a Trucker Chevrolet.
In row number 7 on the outside, in the number 36 is Alex LeBay. He'll be in the Prolon Rousseau Silver Wax Chevrolet. And Jeremy Clements will be in the number 51 driving the All South Electric Chevrolet.
Row 6, there we have another Sieg. That'll be the RSS Orion Sieg, number 39, CMR Construction and Roofing, A-Game Ford on the side of that. And then Jabs Construction on the side of the number 68 Chevrolet for Brandon Brown.
Okay, again, we've already mentioned all these drivers, but we'll give you a little bit more information here. In row number 5, starting in the 10th place, is A.J. Allmendinger driving the number 16 Barber Precast Chevrolet. And in the number 22 is Austin Sindrick driving the Menards Richmond Ford.
A spot, that'll be the number 98 Stuart Haas Racing Monster Energy Ford of Riley Herbst. And in the 7th spot, that'll be the number 10, a Dynagro Seed Chevrolet of Jeb Burton.
Okay, another Burton holds the number 6 spot. Harrison Burton will be driving the number 20 Dex Imaging Toyota. And in the number 11, starting in 5th spot, is Justin Haley for the Leaf Filter Gutter Protection Chevrolet.
Getting into your top 4, the 18, Daniel Hemric, going to start in that 4th spot with the Poppy Bank Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota alongside teammate Ty Gibbs in a Monster Energy Toyota number 54. And Gibbs, again, as a rookie this year.
Okay. And on our front row in the number 7, Brant Chevrolet, is Justin Allgauer, hailing from Riverton, Illinois. And in the number 9 is Noah Gregson, the pole spot. He'll be in the Bass Pro Shops True Timber BRCC Chevrolet.
And that was one of those Sharon side dishes there. I was like, it didn't tell me where Justin Allgauer is from, but somebody just knows that off the top of their head.
Yes, indeed. Hailing from Illinois myself. I'm an Illinois girl. Okay, the track record here is held by Elliot Sadler. This one dates back to 2012, Jay. On March 17th, his time was 1 hour, 41 minutes, and 16 seconds. His average speed was 94.74. So congratulations to Elliot Sadler for still holding on to that record. We'll see if anybody can break that record this weekend.
Certainly could happen. I know we haven't seen quite the same speeds that we did back in Elliott Sadler's day due to the combination. We've talked about the tire setup as well as then the horsepower package that they have there. We'll have to wait and see how close they come with that.
Okay. I am multitasking here, so let me get back on track here. Let's go ahead. We've kind of covered most of the tire notes here already, but just a refresher that it's race number 26. And this is their season finale, I believe, isn't it, Jay, this weekend?
Yep, this will wrap up their regular season battle, which will be between Austin Cindric and A.J. Allmendinger.
Yes, they'll be racing 159.9 miles, covering over 300 laps. And then for the Xfinity Series, they have four set tires for this particular race. So that's something to kind of keep in mind here as well. Let's go over the series point standings for the Xfinity Series.
All right. Mention that the regular season championship battle right now, A.J. Allmendinger holds a 5-point lead over Austin Cindric. Cindric held it most of the year here in the last month. Allmendinger able to catch him and pass him. Had, I think, a 20-point gap, but it's back down to 5. On the year, 25 starts. AJ has 3 wins and 9 stage wins, which gives him 24 playoff points. He's been building that as of late. Cindric had 5 wins as well as 9 stage wins, so already had 34 playoff points built up. Third spot is Justin Allgaier, 2 wins in a stage, is 11 playoff points. He's 121 back, so the regular season championship is down to AJ Allmendinger and Austin Cindric. Then you got Daniel Hemric in fourth. No wins, but 6 stage wins. He's got 6 playoff points built up. Harrison Burton, no race wins, but 2 stage wins for 2 playoff points. Last 2 weeks, it's been Noah Gregson in at number 9 for Junior Motorsports. Picked up 2 race wins. He's got 3 stage wins, which gives him now a total of 13 playoff points, which looks like third most as it is right now. Bottom half here, the other 6, Justin Haley, 1 win, 5 stage wins for 10 playoff points. Jeb Burton, 1 win and 1 stage, gives him 6 playoff points. Jeremy Clements in the 9th spot, no wins or no stages, so doesn't have any playoff points built up as of yet. Then you got Brandon Jones in 10th. Has 1 stage win for 1 point. Riley Herbst doesn't have any. And 12th place is Myatt Schneider with 1 race win for 5 playoff points. Michael Annette missed 4 races, but still in the 13th spot at 524. Needs to make up 34 points. That's a lot to make up in one race. It can be done, but going to have to do that. If he does make it in, he is eligible for the NASCAR waiver as far as being eligible for the playoffs. Then in 14th, you got 14th is Ryan Sieg at 497. That's a 63 point. That is mathematically impossible. So Ryan Sieg on down, got to pick up the win. Ty Gibbs not eligible for the playoffs in 15th. Brandon Brown, another one, would need the victory to pull it off and get into that 12 spots for the playoffs. And then Josh Berry, another one, a rookie that is not eligible for the playoffs, only making 18 starts. The other ones that are still eligible, if they pick up the win, would be Josh Williams in 18th, Alex LeBay in 19th, Tommy Joe Martins in 20th. 25th is Landon Castle, has made all 25 starts. So he would not only have to win, but also move into the top 20 in points in order to be eligible.
Okay, I've got some breaking news here, Jay, that I'm going to get into real quick. The 2022 NASCAR Cup Series schedule just came out, and the Clash, as we know, is going to be at the LA Coliseum on February the 6th to kick off the season. And then it goes to the duel at Daytona on February the 17th and the Daytona 500 on February the 20th. The rest of this looks pretty standard. You go to Auto Club Speedway to close out February, and then in March you have Las Vegas, Phoenix, Atlanta, and Circuit of the Americas is back on the schedule for March 27th. Then in April, you've got Richmond, Martinsville, the Bristol Dirt, and then Talladega to close out April. In May, it's Dover, Darlington, Kansas, the All-Star Race at Texas on May 22nd, and then Charlotte Motor Speedway on May 29th. New this year on June 5th is Worldwide Technology Raceway for the Cup Series. Then to continue out for June, you've got Sonoma Nashville Speedway on June 26th. And then in July, you've got Road America, Atlanta, new date for Atlanta, New Hampshire, and Pocono to close. Well, the Indianapolis Road Course will actually close out the July schedule. In August, it's Michigan, Richmond, Watkins Glen, and Daytona will be the season finale for the regular season championship. Start off at Darlington in September, then Kansas, Bristol, and then it goes to Texas September the 25th. October 2nd is Talladega. Talladega, Charlotte Robo will be a cutoff race. Then they go to Las Vegas in October. Homestead, Miami is a new date for them, October the 23rd. And Martinsville will be the penultimate race before the season finale on November the 6th at Phoenix. Some quick thoughts there on that. Well, I know we'll talk about this in Hot Topics as well.
I was going to say that was my first thought. As I guess we got some hot topics. The two that we had talked about had kind of been leaked out already. The Clash opening up at the Coliseum, and then the addition of Gateway. A couple of different dates there you mentioned. Miami going back into the playoffs, not this season a finale, as that's going to stay at Phoenix for yet another year. But they do move back into the playoffs. And then Pocono losing a date. I like it. Mm-hmm. I like the schedule. I like that there wasn't any major changes. The couple of small ones, adding Gateway, we talked about. We all think that's a great deal. Unfortunate for the loss of the one Pocono race then. We'll see how they continue to massage that in the years to come here. But not a lot of big changes. A couple of date changes. The one thing that got mentioned there, and hopefully it goes through, I know we've had the COVID issue in the past, but California Speedway now going to be a half-mile short track instead of the two-mile track. That's going to be a real interesting situation there when we go out to California.
Yes, indeed. So anyway, and the Coliseum, that is huge. For the Coliseum as well. So some interesting things here. We'll talk more in depth during our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. But I wanted to get that late breaking news out as it was happening here on our podcast. So again, this is a season finale for the Xfinity Series. We're going to know who the champion is when this race is over. Then they start their playoff events, and that means double points for our Fan for Racing Fantasy group, Jay.
Yes, it does. That'll put all three series in, and I'll do some calculations on that. At this point, I don't think any of the series, even Andy on the Cup Series, I think is still mathematically in it, but he's sticking by Briscoe. He said he was gonna, and he has done so, so... not mathematically out yet. He's in a bit of a hole, and Briscoe might have to start winning those races to get him those 16 extra points.
Yes, indeed. Okay, we're going to have to move on to the Bass Pro Shops NRA night race for the Cup Series here. That race is Saturday night under the lights, September the 18th at Bristol Motor Speedway. It will start at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on NBC Sports Network with radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Now, we do know that Martin Truex Jr. will start from the pole for the Bass Pro Shops NRA night race for the Cup Series. Denny Hamlin will be alongside him on the front row. And then it'll be Joey Logano, Chase Elliott, and Kyle Larson to round out the top five, followed by Christopher Bell, Ryan Blaney, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Brad Keselowski to round out the top 10. So we'll go ahead and move on to the lineup there for the Cup Series.
All right, we got 38 starters here. The 38th spot will be the 66 David Starr. This one's going to be a naked market Toyota. And then James Davison in a Chevrolet, the number 15.
Okay, and row 18, starting in the 36th spot, is Garrett Smithley driving his Chevrolet. And then in 35th is J.J. Yaley driving the Nurtec ODT Chevrolet.
The 00, that'll be Quinn Hauf in the Boss Hoss Clyde Chevrolet. And the 52, Josh Balicki, Insurance King Ford, will complete row 17.
In row 16, starting in the 32nd position, will be B.J. McLeod in the number 78 Honor and Remember Ford. And Corey LaJoy will be in the inside lane in the number 7, driving the number the Schulter Systems Chevrolet.
Row number 15 in the 30th spot, that'll be rookie Anthony Alfredo in the Front Row Motorsports number 38 Dude Wipes Ford. To his inside will be the 77 Aspire Motorsports. That'll be Justin Haley with Diamond Creek Water on the side of that Chevrolet.
Okay, one of Justin Haley's cup events. In row number 14 is Bubba Wallace driving the number 23 McDonald's Toyota, and Ryan Preece will be on the inside driving the number 37 Viva Chevrolet.
26th starting spot, that'll be the number 41 of Cole Custer in the Autodesk HaasTooling.com Ford. And another Ford to his inside, that'll be the Fastenal Ford number 17 of Chris Buescher.
Okay, and let me get my place here. I lost my place. Okay, in row 12, in the number 6 Kohler Generators Ford is Ryan Newman. And driving the number 47 Kroger Chevrolet is Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
I feel honored to get to mention the number 43 RPM. That'll be the U.S. Air Force Tuskegee Airmen Chevrolet. And then Daniel Suarez in the number 99 Coca-Cola Chevrolet completes row 11.
Spoken as a true Air Force vet. Okay, and number 10 in the number 14 Rush Truck Center's coming forward is Chase Briscoe, the rookie. Matt DiBenedetto will be in the number 21 Restraw Tight Ford.
Row number 9, there we have RCR, number 3, Austin Dillon in the Bass Pros Tracker Off-Road Chevrolet. Let's hope he don't go off-roading at Bristol. The number 42, that's Ross Chastain in the Moose Fraternity Chevrolet.
And I apologize to everyone for the dings that are happening in the background here. I'm getting all the press releases from all the different tracks about their race for 2022. So my apologies if you hear those dings. That's what that's all about. Okay, in row number 8, driving the number 34 Love Travel Stop Ford is Michael McDowell. And in the Monster Energy Chevrolet number 1 is Kurt Busch, a playoff driver.
We're into the playoff drivers now, and it looks like, I don't know why it doesn't have Michael McDowell listed as a playoff driver, but he should be.
Yeah, he should be a playoff driver as well.
Yep. These are the ones that maybe happen to look to win this race to move on. The number 24, William Byron in the Exalta Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports, and then Tyler Reddick in the RCR number 8 Chevrolet, that raced his way in on points to get into the playoffs.
In row number 6, starting in the 12th position, is Eric Almirola driving the number 10 Smithfield Ford. And in the number 11th position, in the number 48, is Alex Bowman for Ally Chevrolet.
Your top 10, starting in the 10th spot, that'll be the Penske number 2 of Brad Keselowski. Discount Tires as his sponsor this week on that Ford. And then the M&M's Toyota will be the number 18 of Kyle Busch.
Row number 4. Again, we've mentioned these drivers, but we'll mention them again with a little more detail. Kevin Harvick will be in the number 8 spot. Driving the number 4 is Subway Delivery Ford. And driving the number 12, Menards Richmond Ford, is Ryan Blaney.
First time in the playoffs, the number 20, that's Christopher Bell, going to be in the Sirius XM Toyota. You can catch a lot of race coverage on Sirius XM. And Kyle Larson, your top contender right now, or one of at least, in the number 5 Valvoline Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports.
Also the regular season champion. In row number In row number 2, driving the number 9 Hooters Chevrolet is Chase Elliott. And on the inside, driving the number 22 Shell Pennzoil Ford is Joey Logano.
Excuse me. Now, obviously, championship contenders winning the first two races of the 2021 playoffs. Outside of row number 1, the number 11 FedEx Freight Toyota will be Denny Hamlin. And last week's winner in the Bass Pro Shops Toyota, the number 19 for Joe Gibbs Racing, is Martin Truex Jr.
Okay. And, yeah, this is going to be an exciting race. This is an elimination race for the Cup Series. So 4 drivers will be eliminated when this race is over. Now, the track record, this is the longstanding track record for the Cup Series. Driver Charlie Glassbach, going back to July 11th of 1971, had a time of 2 hours, 38 minutes, and 12 seconds with a speed of 101.074 miles per hour. So that's a big record here in the Cup Series at Bristol.
And that's if you have minimal cautions, and that's not normal at Bristol.
Exactly right. Now, the last race at the Federated Auto Parts gives us our driver point standings for coming into Bristol Motor Speedway. And you're right, we've got some drivers who their playoff hopes are on the line this weekend at Bristol. So let's cover the series point standings.
All right, give me 1 second to get that pulled up. I know right now Michael McDowell, unfortunately, is in that 16th and final spot, and I'm pretty sure he is mathematically in a position of must win. Where did my points go? Whoop, there we go. Give it 1 second to load here. Michael McDowell in the 16th spot. There we go. They're currently sitting at 2,015 points. William Byron at 2,035. Tyler Reddick at 2,048. And Alex Bowman at tied at 2,053 is in the 13th and cutoff spot. He's tied with Kurt Busch, who's at 12th at 2,053. Kurt Busch has the advantage of the best finish in the first two races of this round. Then you got Eric Almirola at 2056, Kyle Busch at 2061, and 60 points are available. So technically, Michael McDowell is not mathematically in a must-win situation. But again, making up that many points above 8 drivers is highly unlikely. He could get as far as 8th place Christopher Bell. But like I said, that's pretty much one wins and one loses, and the rest of them would have to be all at the back. In between their 9th place right now, Brad Keselowski's at 2066, Christopher Bell at 2070, Chase Elliott at 2072, Harvick at 2078 in the 6th position. 5th place, Ryan Blaney at 2081, Joey Logano 2093, and then locked in and moving on, Kyle Larson based on points, and then Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex picking up those victories, already guaranteeing that they're moving on to the next round. So I was looking there, mentioned Kurt Busch, Alex Bowman, right on the cut line, tied at 2053, up to Kevin Harvick, and I'll even go as far as Ryan Blaney. That's 30 points. That's half of what's eligible. that's still not real promising as far as racing their way in. But we know Bristol mentioned it with all the other series. They used to say it was like a bull in a china shop. I know now they've gone to kind of putting rocks in a blender and turning it on. You know, Bristol is just that race. Never know what could happen.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of elimination races here. We talked about this being the season finale for the ARCA Menards Series East. We talked about it being the ninth race in the Chew Chief Showdown. It's the 18th race for the ARCA Menards Series out of 20. Or is it 17th? I've forgotten now. And no, it's 18th
that
race for the Truck Series.
Yeah, it's the 18th for the ARCA, 18, 19, 20. Yeah, their final three.
Oh, okay. And then the Truck Series is an elimination race. They'll be eliminating two drivers, the season finale for the Xfinity Series, and also an elimination for the Cup Series when they will be eliminating four drivers. So don't tell me this weekend isn't a huge weekend for racing in NASCAR and the ARCA Menards Series. This is really a very big weekend that people do not want to miss, Jay.
Well, you never want to miss a Bristol race at all, if you ask me, but that's a personal opinion, I guess. With so
that's
much
true.
Else on the line you mentioned, whether it be the round cutoff, regular season championship ending, season finale championship for the ARCA Menards East, yeah, a lot of action going on at Bristol this weekend.
And a lot of stakes that are on the line here for these drivers. If they're not racing to stay in, they're out there racing to win, because for some of these drivers, their only way to guarantee that they're going to move on to the next round is to get a victory. So some of these drivers that are facing elimination are going to be putting everything out on the line to go after that win, to get in to the next round of the playoffs for the Truck Series and the Cup Series. And then we'll know who the regular season champion is going to be for the Xfinity Series as well as the ARCA Menards Series East. So, again, I'm super excited for the race weekend. I hope everybody is able to tune in this weekend. I know it's going to be a big race weekend here in our household. But, Jay, let's give the update on our Fan for Racing Fantasy Group and the point standings there, because after this weekend, it's going to be double points all the way around.
All right. Well, in the Truck Series, Sharon, you got a one-point lead over Mike, 76-75. Andy's right there in it at 73. I've slid back 7 points at 69. Owen's at 67. Sam and Tommy are tied at 64, and James is at 44, so 32 points. That could be done in two races since the Truck Series are in that double point. For the Xfinity Series, this will be the regular season final single-digit points. I got an 8-point lead now, 104. Andy's at 96, Mike in third at 95. Sam 89, Sharon 86, James at 81, Tommy at 78, and Owen at 76. So that one, too, is only 28 points. And once we get into the double points, that could easily be done in two races.
Mm-hmm.
The Cup Series, this one's tight. Up top, I lead by 3 points now over Sam. 147, Sam at 144. Sharon, you jumped up to 137 with Truex's win, moved into third. Owen's at 135, Mike at 128, and James at 107, Tommy at 105. Now, Andy's at 64, like I mentioned, sticking with Briscoe. Not mathematically eliminated at this point, but he's got a big gap to try and cover. From Tommy up, it's only 42 points on the Cup side. And
again,
then the overall,
you can make that up.
Oh, yeah. The overall, this one's quite interesting. I'm leading at 320. Sharon jumped to second now at 299. Mike's at 298. Sam at 297. Owen had a couple of good weeks last week at 278, Tommy at 247, Andy at 233, and James at 232. So that one's 98-point difference. But again, with all three series going in, that means there is 48 points available per weekend. So a 100-point gap could be made up.
Okay. So that's pretty cool. I'm really kind of happy that I had good results last week. I hope I can keep that trend going, but we'll see how that goes. Now, a couple of programming notes that I want to make sure that I get in as well. I mentioned earlier that Dean Thompson was on our show on Monday night. If you haven't heard the interview with him, you'll want to go back and listen to that. He was on during the third half hour of the show. Next week, I have a driver coming on. His name is Blake Lothian. He is a late model driver, was 2 years with the Rev Racing Drive for Diversity program, and now he's kind of branched out on his own. He won last week at Hickory Motor Speedway, and he took the pole, won the race in a twin event there, and we're going to have him on the show this coming Monday night. So definitely looking forward to learning more about Blake Lothian, an up-and-coming late-model driver from Hickory Speedway. And then just like we did this week, we're doing our podcast on Wednesday morning. It will be distributed on Wednesday afternoon. We're going to do the same thing next week. This week we're doing it because of the races from Bristol on Thursday night. Next week it's more of a personal reason for me. It's my birthday weekend. I'm going to get to spend it with my son and my grandson. And I just want to make sure that I have that Thursday night available. So we're going to do the podcast on Wednesday morning. And, again, we will distribute it on Wednesday afternoon so that everybody has the race information. There is a race on Thursday night. It is the ARCA West Series that will be racing at the Las Vegas Bullring. Let me go back and look. I might have it confused with another race. They'll be racing at the Las Vegas Bullring on Thursday night at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So that would be another reason for us to do the show on Wednesday morning. But you'll be able to watch that race uninterrupted on Thursday night. So there you have it, our programming notes for the radio show for the upcoming week and our guest lineup for Monday night. So with that, Jay, we're coming up on 11:30 a.m. Eastern time, and it is time for us to get into our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off, and one of our participants is here already, and it is Michael Orzel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Well, first and foremost, a big hello to everybody. It's good to be back. But more importantly, I also have a very important public announcement to make. I am a man of my word, and Jay Hostman has actually won a bet, legitimately this time. He has won a bet, and I will be making good on that, paying Jay this afternoon. If you don't remember the bet, a few months back, and it was quite a few months back, I bet Jay that Josh Berry would win a third race in a junior motorsports car before Noah Gregson did. Well, at Darlington, Noah Gregson won his third race in a junior motorsports car, and therefore Jay won the bet. So at this very moment in time, I have a case of Mountain Dew Voodoo sitting in the back of my car, and after we get done doing the show today, I'll find some time to meet up with Jay in town and hand it over.
I'm sure it's going to be well shaken by the time you get to his house from the back of your truck.
Well, it's been sitting out in the sun for the past 2 weeks, so it should be good and fermented, too.
Oh, boy. Also, I thought you were going to do this.
That was a good idea. I wish I thought of that one.
It's Jay Huseman's birthday.
Well, once again, thank you for the song, Sharon. And just so you know, it doesn't even matter if that Mountain Dew is heated up because I may not drink that. It's going to go on a trophy case.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Okay, so thank you for making good on the bet, Mike. I know you guys have a lot of fun with that, and that's always a good thing. And we're definitely looking forward to the next bet. Okay, so we had some breaking news during our show today. The lineup came out for the NASCAR Cup Series, Mike. I don't know if you've caught up with that news yet. Have you?
The lineup for, are you talking about next year's schedule, or is there something else that's come out more recently than that?
Next year's schedule.
Yeah, I've been ready to talk about next year's schedule. Obviously, that's the biggest hot topic. I've actually got it pulled up here, ready to discuss.
Okay, awesome. So let's go ahead and get into that. We'll let you start us off.
Sure. Like you said, we've been getting some rumors and tidbits and some kind of dripping leaks over the past few days regarding the NASCAR Cup Series schedule for 2022. It has now officially been released. It's not as radical of a change from the previous year as last year's schedule announcement was, the schedule that we're currently running right now, but there are some big notable changes in there. First and foremost, the season opening exhibition race, the Clash, is moving away from Daytona International Speedway for the first time since 1979. Instead of being held at Daytona, it's going to be run on a quarter-mile short track inside of the LA Coliseum. We can talk about that a little bit independently in terms of the track configuration, but that's going to be the first time the Gen 7 car is on a racetrack being driven competitively is at the LA Coliseum in the Clash. The other notable addition to the schedule is Pocono has lost a date, and that date is going to Worldwide Technology Raceway in Gateway in the St. Louis market area. We've seen truck races and Xfinity races at Gateway, but this is the first time the NASCAR Cup Series is going to be racing at Gateway. So those are the two big major changes to talk about for next year's schedule, at least that I've seen so far.
And what are your thoughts about those changes?
Overall, I like them. The logistics of the LA Coliseum thing, there's good and there's bad. I think it's going to devalue Speed Weeks in Daytona. It used to be a big – I mean, if you wanted to roll in the 24-hour race, it was almost a month-long affair. And we used to do this when I was a kid. We would go to – we'd bring the camper over to Daytona for the 24-hour race weekend. We'd set up shop in the infield for the 24-hour race. We'd watch that. And then we just drag the camper outside the gate and camp outside of the racetrack for the next 2 weeks because the next weekend you had Daytona 500 pole qualifying, and then you had the duels on Thursday, and then you had the Xfinity race or the Busch Series race at that point, and you had the Daytona 500. But in addition to that Daytona 500 qualifying day, you also had the Busch Clash on the same day as Daytona 500 pole qualifying. And that was a big draw because it was an actual race versus just qualifying. So not having the Clash at Daytona on that same weekend as Daytona 500 qualifying, I think is going to hurt overall attendance and interest in Speed Weeks as a whole. So hopefully the trade-off with getting into the Los Angeles market is worth it. We'll see how that pans out.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts.
Well, I know Mike hadn't been able to be on the show. We had kind of, with the leaked information on this, had this discussion. Pretty much all kind of have that same thought process of it does kind of take away from Daytona and the Speed Weeks, but we've seen that in years past, and I know Kevin Harvick was one that talked about it, of having kind of liking the shortened trip to Daytona. You don't have preseason testing no more. That's one Mike left off. It used to be actually could be considered 2 months because the teams were down there for preseason testing and their kickoff with new drivers, media sessions and stuff in January, then come back for the 2 weeks plus of Speed Weeks. So that's one where finding that balance between the fans and the drivers, the logistics, like Mike mentioned, of that first race being out in LA, kind of concerning, if you will. It's not for all the teams, so that's not as big a concern. But it is interesting to see how this works out, how they do this within the Coliseum. I do like the fact that NASCAR is exploring new options and trying new things. So with that, I got to give them credit for that. We'll see how this goes. I know Tommy and I both were kind of thinking the All-Star race would have been one to do maybe out at the Coliseum instead of the Clash and keep that with Daytona. I know I gave Tommy a hard time. He said he likes it the way it is. You know, it's old school. And I said he's not old enough to be old school with that from that aspect. But it really was part of the Daytona experience. So we'll have to see how fans react to that.
Okay. Yeah, so far I've seen positive comments. I haven't really noticed any of the fan comments yet, but as far as the driver comments, they all seem to be kind of hyped about racing at the LA Coliseum, which is a huge venue, and they are preparing a track specifically for this race at that Coliseum. Now, I really don't have a problem with it. I kind of see the marketing aspect of it, of reaching out to do a West Coast season opener as well as an East Coast season opener with the duels and the Daytona 500. I think they've left enough time in there for drivers with the LA Coliseum being on February the 6th, and the duel doesn't actually take place until February the 17th. So, and then, of course, the Daytona 500 on the 20th. So then they're going to be going back to California for the Auto Club on February the 27th. So I think it's kind of a great idea, really, to have a West Coast season opener. I think it's NASCAR's way of reaching out to them and wanting to include them as part of the festivities of opening up the season. So I applaud it, and I think it's a really good idea. We'll have to see how the fans react to it, because that, like I've admitted to, I haven't really seen a lot of fan reaction yet. But I can't think of a better place to go other than Daytona at that time of the year for those of us that are in the Midwest. If I wanted to go out to California to watch the Clash, it would be a cool trip to take at that time of the year. So I think it's a great idea. Some other changes that we didn't mention, COTA's back on the track, but in March instead of in July. I think that's a good idea. So I'm glad to see COTA back on the schedule. Atlanta actually has two races on the schedule. Did I see two races for Atlanta? Yes, I did. A July race as well as a March race on the schedule. They'll be back on Bristol dirt, so I think that's a positive thing. They mentioned the All-Star race being back at Texas again, Worldwide Technology on June the 5th for the Cup Series. They're back at Nashville in June. Another change that we did not mention is a shakeup in the playoff races, because Texas is going to be in September this year. I particularly am super excited about that, because I can go visit my Texas family and perhaps go to that race. And then also Homestead Miami is back on the schedule, and Martinsville is going to be the penultimate race. So Homestead Miami opens up the final, or is in the middle of the final round of eight, I believe it is. Las Vegas opens that up, then it's Homestead Miami, and Martinsville is the race just before the season finale at Phoenix. So I do see a little bit of a shakeup in that for this year, or for next year, on the series as well. So again, I'm glad to see Homestead Miami back in the playoff mix. I think it belongs there, and I think it's a good decision to put it back in that segment of the schedule. So we'll go back around the horn here. Mike, what are your follow-ups, comments?
I absolutely agree with you about Miami being back in the playoff mix. I think it's been sorely missed there these past 2 years. Miami was always, I still think Miami was a better finishing race than Phoenix is, you know, a championship race than Phoenix is, because we didn't go there other than for the championship race. Miami was always the place for champions, and to have it completely taken out of the playoffs, I think was a move too far in the wrong direction. If they wanted to change up the championship race to a different venue, okay, I understand the desire to do something different every once in a while, but Miami, like I said, is one of those kind of special racetracks where it deserves a little bit higher billing than just a mid-March nothing race like it's had for the past two seasons. So I'm really glad to see it back in the playoffs there. Pocono losing a date, I don't think anyone's going to miss that. There's a reason they consolidated it down to one doubleheader weekend for the past two seasons. And remember, that change was made even before COVID. So it wasn't just a COVID change where they were trying to consolidate Pocono down to one weekend. It's because the Pocono races, this year was kind of an exception. They were better than usual. But a lot of times the Pocono races are not the most entertaining races. So having two dates at Pocono when you had these other tracks like Gateway or Iowa, obviously Iowa didn't make it on the schedule this year, but there's other tracks out there that a lot of fans feel are more deserving of at least one cup date than Pocono is to have two. So I think that was a good move for there. Bristol Dirt, I wasn't a huge fan of it. I know a lot of fans were. Me personally, I wasn't a big fan of the Bristol Dirt race. It was okay for something to see, but it is what it is. Coda being back on the schedule is great. I thoroughly enjoyed that. So hopefully they have a little bit better weather this year and it's not as much of a melee as it was this past year. And we really get to see Coda shine on its own as a venue where the big story there is the racing and not necessarily the weather conditions that led to the problems that they had there this year. So I think those are all real positive changes. Overall, I'm happy with the schedule. Would I like to see them go to a couple different places? Sure. There's always other racetracks that if they're not on the schedule, you'd like to see them. But at the same time, I think they did really well with what tracks are on the schedule and when they put them where they did for the most part. The weather's going to be what it's going to be at some places. And it's going to be unavoidable, but I think they did a pretty good job with it.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up.
I would have to agree. Most of the changes, with the exception of maybe the Coliseum deal, and that's one that I'll hold reservations. Any reservations I have, we'll see how it works out. The placement of the different races, I think they did work in really well, specifically Miami Homestead. I kind of agree with Mike on the fact that was a one-time visit, and it was for the championship versus Phoenix, where we've been going for a long time, multiple races a year. Kind of makes it a difference, but I do think it needed to be back in the playoffs for sure. A couple of the other changes, I know with the worldwide technology, I know Mike mentioned Iowa did not get on the schedule. We haven't seen anything about Chicagoland other than possibly playing football there. So I think putting a new track in the Midwest area, I know it's not going to please everybody, but it is still in that Midwest market area, was a good move. We'll see how the Cup cars do on it. The other one was, Mike mentioned, Bristol, the dirt race. And being a dirt guy, I was excited about it. It did not turn out the best, if you will. But I think that is one of those of give it time as they learn from it. Obviously, the weather, just like COTA, played a huge factor. But I think they're going to learn from it and be better prepared, and as well as how the cars are going to handle on it. I think we'll see the evolution of that and it become a better event the longer they continue to do it.
Okay, a couple of things that I did not mention that are staying the same. They are going to race the Indianapolis Road Course on July the 31st. The season finale will again be at Daytona, so you've got the season finale and the season opener at Daytona. And then also Darlington will open up the playoffs. So those are things that are going to remain the same. The Charlotte Roval will be featured in the playoffs as well. So just an FYI that those are some of the things that are staying the same. I'm a little surprised that they didn't do a doubleheader this year like they did, or next year like they did this year with Pocono, or another track for that matter if they wanted to do a doubleheader. But I'm okay with it. I was just surprised to see that they didn't continue that concept and that idea. So I don't know that it maybe went as well. One of the things that I liked about it is we had the two races over the weekend. They were a little bit shorter races as opposed to longer races, especially at Pocono. I thought that was a good thing. I'm a little surprised that they didn't do another doubleheader this year. That would be among my list of surprises on the schedule. So other than that, I'm kind of excited about the schedule for next year. I think they made some good decisions, and we'll see how it all plays out next season. Okay, so what's our next hot topic, Mike?
I guess you guys talked about it before a little bit regarding the LA Coliseum. We've got a little bit more details regarding the racetrack itself, and they said that it's still to be determined regarding especially the banking in the corners. They said they're looking at a fairly shallow bank angle, somewhere between 0 and 5 degrees for this quarter-mile track, and they've been testing it on iRacing, and I'm interested to see what your thoughts as far as how that track should be configured.
Okay, Jay?
Yeah, that's beyond me. The engineers, I don't know if Kyle Busch talked about using simulation and iRacing as far as determining something. We've seen that in the past. I think Bristol Dirt was another one. That was kind of what they based it off of. It's really tough to get the full concept of it. When it comes to iRacing versus actual on-track performance. I think COTA was another one where they talked about that, of what they wanted to set up with iRacing. So I'm a little leery about that, but again, we've seen it in the past. This first one may be a little bit of a rough thing. We'll have to let it develop then of what they do learn from actual on-track performance. From experience, think back to the dirt track at Bristol with the event they do in the dome, the Chili Bowl. When you do an indoor event and are building something inside of another venue like that, there is always going to be some issues. It's a matter of how quickly they can adapt, what they can learn from it, and go from there. I just talked to my dad this morning. I said, is that going to be an asphalt track or a dirt track?
I think it's asphalt.
Last I heard, paved asphalt.
That to me, the amount of money then of to do an asphalt track, temporary asphalt track, is a little concerning. Obviously, that shouldn't give like dirt does. When I view my experiences from Bristol or the Dome, so asphalt's a little bit different. The cost of it, but. Like my dad said, the cost of putting dirt on Bristol was a huge expense, and hopefully will turn out to be better and grow. So I'm willing to give it a chance. Like I said, my thing is more about the whole taking it away from the Daytona and the tradition of it being at Daytona, but I am not going to hold it against it. I am looking forward to see what they do.
And I'm sorry, I am multitasking today. I've got a lot of people contacting me that don't realize I'm doing the podcast this morning, I guess. And I've been a little distracted. Can you refresh the topic for me, please?
Sure. Couple pieces on it is the use of iRacing in terms of trying to develop the track at the LA Coliseum, as far as what's your thoughts of what this track might end up looking like.
Okay. Yes, I would have to agree with Jay. I was looking for the release on it. This is something that, let me see, that's the schedule, that when I saw it and they said that they were preparing a track specifically for the racing, my thought was that has to be a temporary track. And I'm pretty sure they did say that it was an asphalt track. So iRacing does some support for these drivers as far as helping them. I don't know that they're going to, are they going to have iRacing support for the LA Coliseum?
It's already out on iRacing. It's publicly available on iRacing right now. I'm not sure what configuration they have, but yeah, the public can access LA Coliseum and race there.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so I'm sure drivers will be utilizing that as a resource. It's not going to be the be-all, end-all, but it will certainly be helpful to them, I think. I think that the drivers seem to be kind of pumped about it from some of the things that I've seen on Twitter anyway, pumped about going to the Coliseum because there's so many historic things that happen at the L.A. Coliseum. It's kind of like going to Indianapolis. And the historic nature of racing on that track and the feeling that drivers get. There is an aura that happens when you go to Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I would kind of imagine that same kind of aura happening when they go to the LA Coliseum. So I think a lot of people are pretty pumped about it. And I'm kind of pumped because it is going to bring in, hopefully, big audience to that Coliseum. My fear about it is that the LA Coliseum is huge. And if we have 120,000 people that show up at the LA Coliseum, it's going to look like it's empty. So I think fans are going to rush to a judgment that maybe it wasn't successful because the Coliseum looks empty, but if 120,000 people show up, that's going to be a huge event. If 60,000 people show up, it's going to be huge. It's going to be similar to a full house at Bristol. So I worry about the perception of its success based on the size of the Coliseum. But I'm kind of excited about it. So let's go with the next round. Mike?
Well, actually, the LA Coliseum's seating capacity is only listed, I just Googled it, 78,467 is the capacity for the LA Coliseum. So, yeah, it's not like some of the Alabama or Ohio State, some of those giant college football stadiums that can seat 200,000 people. The Coliseum is big, you're absolutely correct, but it's not to that scale. So typical crowds at NASCAR races these days, it seems to be somewhere in the 40 to 50,000 person range, with the exception of special ones like Daytona, Talladega, Bristol, things like that, which will bring a higher crowd. But it seems like 40,000 plus or minus about 10 seems to be the sweet spot for attendance. So if we double that to the 60 to 80,000, we're right there at the capacity of the LA Coliseum. So I think that's probably about right in terms of an expected fan capacity. And hey, everyone likes being part of an exclusive club, right? So if the place is sold out and people can't get tickets, well, the people who do have tickets, they get that little extra benefit of being able to feel like they're into something exclusive that not everyone had the opportunity to participate in. So with regard to iRacing, I'm kind of with Kyle Busch on this one. I think it's overrated as a tool in terms of preparing for a race or getting things ready in terms of track configuration, track layout, stuff like that. I did dabble in iRacing for a little while. I know there's a lot of people who are really deep into it, and man, do they get deep into it. But the problem with iRacing is they've created this identity around it that convinces people that, hey, if I'm good in iRacing, I'm a big-time race car driver. And it's like the kind of people who go on Microsoft Flight Simulator and spend, you know, months and months and months playing Microsoft Flight Simulator, and now suddenly they feel like they're some sort of a qualified airline pilot, and that's not the thing either. So in terms of testing layouts and whatnot, it's only as good as the data that's input into it. So things like grip of the pavement or the way the track is going to wear. And that's a big consideration that I've got on this one is, you're right, they're talking about being a temporary track. So how much time and investment are they honestly going to put into it? Not saying that they're going to do a bad job, but if they're building this with the intention of a one-time or at least once a year kind of thing, how much time, effort, and money do they want to sink into it for something that's only going to be used for realistically, what, an hour or two tops? So you got to figure that it's probably not going to be the most durable kind of surface, and we may see significant track wear by the time that the event is over as that temporary asphalt wears away. The other consideration in terms of building the track isn't just the surface itself, but you've got to have some sort of a barrier on the outside, maybe the inside of the track, to keep cars from going places they're not supposed to go. It's only going to be a quarter mile, so it doesn't need to be anything super serious. I don't think they're going to need a catch fence or probably not even safer barriers, but they're going to need something to keep cars contained within that track and not damage the rest of the facility because it's a quarter mile track. And probably the best sample that we have for it right now is Bowman Gray Stadium, and it's appropriately known as the Madhouse. And I expect a similar kind of thing happening at the Clash. So you're going to have contact. You're going to have accidents, and you need to make sure that the cars stay contained within that track to avoid damaging the facility and hopefully not hurting anybody. So those are all considerations that need to go into designing this track, and it's going to be something really interesting to follow to see what develops out of it. I've got faith they're going to put together some sort of an interesting venue and facility, but I think there's a lot of challenges there that go way beyond just putting a date on the calendar, and it's going to be a lot to overcome since they said they're going to start construction on it on January 1st, New Year's Day, and then they're going to have the race in early February. So it's going to be a month or so from start to finish to put this facility together, and that's a lot of bridges to cover. And we're only, what, 3 months away from January, so they don't have a whole lot of time to plan it. Yes.
Mike, I'm going to jump in here real quick on your soapbox to make an announcement because we are going to go off the air at exactly noon Eastern time. I just, in case anybody is listening, I just want you to know we're going off the air and at that time, but we are continuing our conversation and we'll have that available on our podcast. And I will be putting the podcast out on fanforracing.com as soon as we get finished here. So I will post that on Twitter. So watch for that. And then if you've listened up to this point, just fast forward to the 2 hour mark. Okay, go ahead.
Well, that was about all. It's, like I said, it's going to be a lot to follow here. And really, we're only about 4 months or so away from the green flag at this event. So there's a lot of things that are going to need to happen between now and then. And it's going to be something to follow. And it's probably not the last time we're going to be talking about it, even before the end of this season.
I have the same kind of concerns as far as Mike does. When you talk about putting together a dirt track, dirt is a little more givable and gets tore up anyway just through the natural process of racing. Whereas asphalt, the track has to maintain. So that is going to be an interesting concept of how they do that. Like he said, of a month preparation or so, and it being a temporary plan is way above me and anything I can imagine or concept, but I know they put together some good teams to do so. So we'll have to see how it plays out. Like I said, I'm excited about it, and it is one of those of, I guess, as more open-minded than some others. Even if it doesn't go well on this first one, if they say they're going to do it another year, I look at it of they're going to take what they learned from it and make it better. So even if it, like I said, it doesn't come out exactly real good the first year, I'd still be in favor of doing it a second year as they grow and learn.
Yeah, one of the things, and I'm staying open as well, one of the things about this track is that they're celebrating their centennial next year. So that's part of the excitement about racing at the Coliseum during its centennial year and kind of kicking off not just the NASCAR season, but kicking off the centennial year for the Coliseum as well. It is going to be an asphalt track. So it's a quarter mile asphalt short track, which is going to be new. Now, short track racing at a Coliseum like that is not new. They have done it, and I know it's not, it might be new for the type of cars that they're racing now, but I know that they've done short track racing at Soldiers Field, which, by the way, I looked it up. It is a capacity of 61,500. They've done short track racing at Soldier Field. So I don't know that they have the issues that you're talking about. Safety is certainly going to be a concern. And knowing NASCAR the way I know NASCAR, they're going to try to do everything they can to make this a safe venue. But I think as fans, we also need to keep in mind that this is the first time that they're doing that. So there's going to be things that don't maybe go according to plan that maybe they'll have to adjust if they're thinking about doing this at other tracks, like, for instance, the Soldier Field, where they have done racing on that track before. I know it's all been changed over the years, and it's not the same track that it was when they were doing racing there. But maybe this asphalt track could be something that could be a traveling track, so to say, that could go to other coliseums. So just something to kind of keep in mind. Again, I don't know that they're going to do this on an ongoing basis. I'm just speculating here as to what the possibilities might be. Again, I really like the idea of opening it up in the West Coast market and making them a part of the opening festivities. I do think that NASCAR has a great deal of experience, and I do think that people, including the drivers, are going to want to make this as safe as they possibly can for themselves as well as for the fans. And I'm sure that they can certainly make that happen. They might have to block off the seats that are closer to the ground there in order to make it safe for everybody. So just something to kind of keep in mind. I have faith in NASCAR that they're going to do what's right for the fans. They're going to do what's right for the drivers, and again, I think it's huge that they're making up part of that centennial year for the LA Coliseum. I think it's fantastic that they're inclusive of that West Coast market, and I can't wait to see how it plays out. Who knows? We might be disappointed in how it plays out, but I'm willing to give it a chance to see how it plays out before I make a judgment on it and kind of prejudge it before it even happens. So we'll see how it goes. Jay, do you want to bring up the next hot topic?
All right. We got Sheldon Creed going after a truck championship, but he's already made his announcement for 2022, and he's going to be going Xfinity Series racing with Richard Childress Racing.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts about that?
This is exciting news here. We've talked about Sheldon Creed potentially trying to get into the Xfinity Series, and I think we're all pretty down on his chances just in terms of the outlook for GMS and what he's doing at GMS right now, which since we've talked about that, he's improved, it seems like. It really seems like they've stepped it up for the playoffs. But we're kind of down on his chances of getting an Xfinity ride. So the fact that not only he got one, but he got an RCR ride, which traditionally tend to be a fairly competitive car, we're thinking if he ended up in the Xfinity Series, maybe it'd be like a JD Motorsports or something. So I think this is a really great move for Sheldon Creed. The RCR cars in the Xfinity Series, they're not quite JRM or Joe Gibbs Racing level competitive, but they're not bad cars either. They tend to run up front. So if you put a really skilled race car driver like Sheldon Creed in there, I would say he's probably on the short list of championship contenders for next year if all things go well. We saw Tyler Reddick compete and win a championship in the Xfinity Series in an RCR car not too long ago, and I don't see any reason why Sheldon Creed can't do the same thing in a similar equipment. The other interesting part of this rumor is this rumor kind of started a few days before the official announcement on the Door Bumper Clear podcast. They talked about they were kind of coy about it. They didn't say Sheldon Creed by name, but they talked about a GMS racing driver moving into the Xfinity Series. And the other part of that rumor was that Ty Dillon had a full-time ride in the Cup Series, and it was going to be with GMS Racing. That has not been announced yet. That remains rumor. But the first half of the DBC rumor of Sheldon Creed going to the Xfinity Series ended up being true. So I'm kind of interested to see if the other shoe's going to drop here soon, and we see Ty Dillon announced as the driver of the GMS Racing Cup Series entry.
Okay. I think this is great news as well. GMS, by the way, is an affiliate team with RCR, so it makes sense to me that he would go to that affiliate to move up into the Xfinity Series. They both are part of the Chevrolet program, And I think this is a really good move for Sheldon Creed. I think he'll be a championship contender next year. We'll have to wait and see if that happens, but I do see him being a championship contender here in the Xfinity Series for RCR. RCR's had some really good teams in the Xfinity Series. Going back to, Kevin Harvick winning a championship there, to Austin Dillon winning a championship in the Xfinity Series with RCR. Martin Truex Jr. with RCR? No, he was with another team.
That was with Champs too. Yeah, that was with Champs too. Junior Motorsports.
Yeah, I think it was part of the RCR Chevrolet grouping, if you will, but not with RCR. I do think that is a really good move for Sheldon Creed, and I do think that we will see him competing for a championship in that series. He's a strong competitor, and I'm happy for him that he was able to get this ride at RCR. As far as the other rumor mill that you talked about, we know that GMS Racing has already said that they would like to go cup racing, and I hope that that does come true, that it is Ty Dillon that they're putting in that GMS car, and it might explain why GMS wants to go into the Cup Series, because it expands the driver development as far as Chevrolet. I think they've been a little bit behind the curve as far as driver development and using that driver development to expand on the bigger teams. Like Hendrick Motorsports and Junior Motorsports, like Hendrick Motorsports and the other Chevrolet teams. But Toyota has been probably one of the better ones at it, as well as Ford, although they seem a little weak on the Xfinity side, but we see a lot of drivers come up from the truck series. I do like that GMS Racing is looking at coming into the Cup Series and kind of expanding on that Chevrolet development. And I think having Sheldon Creed in the Xfinity Series is all part of that bigger picture plan, if you will. Mike, or Jay, I'm sorry, your follow-up?
Yeah, I like it for Sheldon Creed. I think Mike was a little liberal there with the use of how we thought Sheldon Creed was going to do or be able to get a ride. Some of us see talent in him as well as Noah Gregson. So did I expect him to go to one of the top teams like RCR, which I do consider them one of the top teams? They haven't maybe as of recent been that top team, but they have always had a very solid Xfinity Series program. I think back to Daniel Hemric when they moved him up from Xfinity up to Cup. He was in the championship hunt there. So I think it is a good move. When we talk about, Sharon mentioned it, the development program. GMS did have a Xfinity Series program. They shut it down, went back to focus on the truck. They want to go Cup racing. Why rebuild their Xfinity Series program if they can work with RCR and utilize that avenue? And I think that's where, if it comes to play of Ty Dillon being their Cup driver, a veteran driver, whether he's gotten the wins or not, he is a very solid and veteran driver to start the team and get him pointed in the right direction. We've seen other drivers so heavily utilized, Landon Castle, J.J. Yaley. You don't see them as top winning drivers at the Cup level, but they get utilized for that reason because of their knowledge and their experience. So I think for a year or two, if they use Ty Dillon for that, and then the plan maybe of Sheldon Creed being the one to move up, and then, like I said, you have Richard Childress Racing as that developmental program, and Sharon pointed it out. Toyota did a great job of developing drivers at these younger, lower series, but having no room at the top, whereas Chevy and Ford had room at the top, but they didn't have the development system coming through. Chevrolet, more so now, I think, than we've seen in the past, Ford is still lacking other than in the truck series. So So I think that'll be interesting to see how that partnership plays out.
Okay, Mike, your follow-up.
Sure. With regard to Ty Dillon going to the Cup Series, like we said, that is all a rumor. I've only really heard it coming from one source, so don't take that as any kind of gospel. But like Jay said, it makes sense for a lot of reasons, not the least of which being the family association with Richard Childress, Ty Dillon being Mr. Childress's other grandson in addition to Austin. So having the ties to the Childress family and therefore the Childress bank account, it makes a lot of sense in terms of trying to stand up GMS Racing as a potentially competitive Cup Series team. Because, you know, if you're looking for a guy with Cup Series experience to build your team around, there are other Cup Series free agents that are out there. Right now, Ryan Newman and Matt DiBenedetto, most notably, who are arguably a better option in terms of pure driver performance, or at least experience in relatively top teams, than somebody like Ty Dillon. But Newman and DiBenedetto don't bring the sponsorship to the table. So there's kind of your consideration on that there. As far as Sheldon Creed in the Xfinity Series, really not a whole lot more to add. I think he will be successful there. I don't know if he's going to come out of the gate as a championship contender, but the real question is going to be if GMS is going Cup racing, and this is part of a three-way triangulated deal in order to make that work, what does that do for Richard Petty Motorsports, which is currently an RCR-affiliated Cup Series team? They're already struggling a little bit. They have been for years. And if GMS is going to come in as another RCR-affiliated Cup Series team, what does that mean for the future of Richard Petty Motorsports and their association with Richard Childress Racing? I haven't seen or heard anything regarding that, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on if this comes to fruition the way it's rumored to do so.
I don't think that GMS affiliation is something new. I think that's something that's been going on for a while, for quite a while, actually.
Well, sure, but not at the Cup Series level.
Well, not at the Cup Series level, obviously, but they've had that affiliation with RCR. RCR has used GMS Racing as kind of a means of bringing people into their organization. So I do think that that is not really something new. That they've worked with that organization over the years. Maybe not to the full development potential that we're talking about potentially coming up here in the future, but they have worked with them. As far as there was something else you said that I wanted to comment on, and now I can't remember it. I do think that GMS, we know that they're coming to the Cup Series. They've already announced that. So that part of it isn't really a rumor. We just don't know who's coming to it. And you mentioned Ty Gibbs being the driver there, potentially, based on the rumor.
Ty Dillon.
Ty Dillon, I'm sorry, yeah. Ty Dillon. I do wonder if they might consider bringing somebody like a Matt DiBenedetto or a Ryan Newman as part of that package, as part of the development of their team. So, I mean, that still is a possibility there as well. And Newman, I know, has an affiliation with RCR, having raced there for a few years. I don't know if that's going to help or hurt him, but that is a possibility, I think, as well. I don't know how realistic it is, but I think it's certainly a possibility. As far as Sheldon Creed, yeah, maybe he won't come out of the gates. It might take him the first half of the season to maybe get used to maybe a few different tracks, although I think a lot of the tracks that they race in trucks are the same. The car and how it handles is going to be a little bit different. So, but he has raced in the ARCA Menards Series and other late model series. So I don't see that really being a huge issue for him. But I would say the second half of next season, we're going to see him come alive. And I hope it's not the only season that he races in the Xfinity Series. I hope he races a second season in the Xfinity Series. and has that opportunity to go for a championship in that series. I think it'll only help him as he moves forward into Cup. And we've kind of talked about that as well, how the Xfinity Series and staying in the Xfinity Series for 2 or 3 years is not a negative thing, but a positive thing for a lot of these drivers. And I'd love to see Matt DiBenedetto come down and race in the Xfinity Series or even the Truck Series. I think that would be pretty cool to see. So I'll just throw that out there. Jay, final word.
Yeah, we'll have to see how he does in the Xfinity Series. He is one, based on what we saw coming out of ARCA, and I know that's not always a guarantee, seemed to be, I think he struggled more to adapt to the trucks than anything. Now we're seeing the fruits of that. When he gets in the RCR machine, see what he does in that first year. He is one that if they were to move up from the Xfinity Series after 1 year, I kind of have a little bit of confidence in, but we've seen that with others. Like Sharon mentioned, they do need that second, maybe even third year in Xfinity before moving up to, as that is quite the jump. So we'll have to see. Something that Mike hit on, though, of the Richard Petty Motorsports, if that's the case, and they are a RCR affiliate, and that term affiliate is where it comes in loosely. It's not a teammate, it's an affiliate, that maybe then RPM and GMS can become more teammates than affiliates to RCR and help each other and both grow. I know RPM's been a two-car team in the past and couldn't do it on their own, but maybe having GMS come in of a separate one and both of them build off of each other.
That's a good point. Okay, we've got a few more minutes here. Mike, did you have another topic you wanted to bring up for us to discuss?
Yeah, I sure do. Came out a couple days ago about the future for the 54 car for the rest of the year. This was reported by Casey Campbell on Twitter, so I'm not super familiar with it, but it sounds like it's come from Joe Gibbs Racing indirectly here. But anyway, John Hunter Nemechek is going to be in the 54 car at Talladega, Texas, and Phoenix, and then the remaining races, which include Bristol, Las Vegas, Charlotte, the Roval, Kansas, and Martinsville, are all going to be run by Ty Gibbs. So two drivers left running in the 54 car for the remainder of the year. Ty Gibbs, not a big surprise. He's obviously been doing extremely well in that 54 car. And even though it hasn't officially been announced, it's most likely he's either going to be driving the 54 or some other Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota full-time in the Xfinity Series next year. But seeing John Hunter Nemechek announced as having quite a few more additional dates coming in the 54 car, it makes me wonder if that's setting John Hunter up for a full-time Xfinity Series ride next year with Joe Gibbs Racing.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, I know, again, Mike, it was one of the shows you missed. We did hit on this a little bit the other night. So I think I read some of the comments you had that you and I had gone back and forth. Certainly interesting, and I do think it is setting him up, even if it is not for the opportunity within Joe Gibbs Racing itself, but for another team, just like Kyle Busch Motorsports, bringing him back to the Truck Series. He's winning races, going after a championship. They know that another team is going to come looking to him again. So I think this is an opportunity where put him out there for some additional sponsorship, as Mike mentioned, the Safelite being one that was kind of with him in Freight Auctions. That's not going to carry him for a whole season, so that gives him that opportunity to maybe reach out to other sponsors in his performance in those races. Now, it could be that they do keep him in with the Joe Gibbs excuse me, I could use Mountain Dew. How long do I have to wait yet, Mike? No.
Depends how warm you want. The sun's not really out very bright yet.
Okay, yeah, it's got to be later in the afternoon, okay. But give him that opportunity, and we don't know yet what Joe Gibbs Racing's plans next year are for their full Xfinity Series team. We've heard rumors of them cutting back and going to only two full-time teams. They haven't even announced Ty Gibbs full-time for next year. We know pretty confident it's going to happen, and we all agree it should with what he's demonstrated. So maybe they do get him in full-time as well. We'll have to wait and see. But I do think it is setting him up for a future somewhere, whether it be with their team or not.
Yeah, I would agree. However, there's one thing to kind of keep in mind. Earlier in June, they announced that John Hunter Nemechek was going to race in that Joe Gibbs racing machine, number 54, at Bristol. This week, though, they announced that instead of John Hunter Nemechek being in that car, they were going to put Ty Gibbs in the number 54 at Bristol. That concerns me just a little bit, that maybe there's a sponsorship issue there. Although they did say that he will still have three races, it just won't be, it won't include Bristol as the three races that he is going to race in. So just a word of note there. Now, I would love to see John Hunter Nemechek and Ty Gibbs both racing next season in the Xfinity Series. What worries me is if the both of them are racing in the Xfinity Series, what happens to Daniel Hemric, who is now in the number 18. I feel sorry for Hemric because he is such a consistently performing driver, but he has yet to win in any series, that he's ever raced for. And, I know that people and sponsorship is driven by being in victory lane. So that does not bode well, I think, for Daniel Hemric if both of those drivers are racing in the Xfinity Series, unless they bring a third car into the series. I think that would be interesting if they do that. It does worry me a little bit as it relates to Daniel Hemric and what happens to him if both of those drivers come into the series next season. And you're right, the fact that they're both getting those starts part-time this year certainly points in the direction of both of them racing in the series, excuse me, with Joe Gibbs Racing next year. The first race, by the way, the next race for John Hunter Nemechek will be Talladega, as opposed to what was originally scheduled at Bristol Motor Speedway. So, Mike, your follow-up.
Yeah, I kind of agree with everything y'all are saying with regard to John Hunter Nemechek as well as the broader future of Joe Gibbs Racing Xfinity Series program. John Hunter, I'm not going to say he's their guy, but he's definitely shown that he made the most of the opportunity that Kyle Busch Motorsports gave him in the Truck Series this year. Not sure whether he's going to win the championship or not, but he's certainly in a very strong position to contend for it. Things happen. Ask William Byron whether he's actually going to win the Truck Series championship or not, but I don't think anybody can make a reasonable argument that John Hunter hasn't absolutely capitalized on the opportunity given to him this year and definitely deserves consideration for another opportunity to do well, whether it is in the Xfinity Series or back in the Cup Series. It sounds like the Xfinity Series is the door that's opening to him right now, and I think he could do very well there if given the right opportunity, and Joe Gibbs Racing would certainly be it. In terms of the broader future of Joe Gibbs Racing, yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know. I've heard the same rumors that y'all have regarding them downsizing. Kyle Busch has already said that he's done in the Xfinity Series. He got his 101 wins, and now he's going to retire from the Xfinity Series. So that leaves a lot of slots open in the 54 or whatever their all-star car is, or they could just downsize that one and see what happens. But that's also a big sponsor draw, so who knows. As far as the other full-time Joe Gibbs Racing Xfinity drivers, namely Daniel Hemric, Harrison Burton, and Brandon Jones, we already know Harrison Burton is leaving to go to the NASCAR Cup Series, so that's one seat open at Joe Gibbs Racing. But as far as Daniel Hemric and Brandon Jones, tough to say. Brandon Jones apparently brings a decent amount of money to the table, so he might have a ride so long as the check's clear. And as far as Daniel Hemric goes, you're right. I've never heard an unkind word said about the guy with regard to his personality, his generosity, his everything about Daniel Hemric says that he's a great guy. But he's been in one of the top three NASCAR touring series for going on the better part of a decade now, and he has never once made it to victory lane. It's kind of the same argument with Matt DiBenedetto. At some point, you can only go so far based on your personality and based on the potential that people see in you. At some point, that potential has got to pan out, and if it doesn't pan out, it's time to move on and find somebody else who has potential that might actually pan out. So we'll see where this goes. I'm not sure what kind of backing Daniel Hemric has financially, whether he can pay his way into a ride and stay there. But in terms of merit and in terms of winning his way into the ride, this may be the end of the road for Daniel Hemric. We'll have to see how that shakes out for Joe Gibbs Racing.
Okay, Jay.
Well, the one thing I look at, and this goes back to with the GMS deal as well, what I think we're going to start seeing, is my hope anyway, a full field of competitive cars in the Cup Series, more competitive teams, top competitive teams in the Xfinity Series as well. So I think it's a huge shift from what we've seen. I know we've kind of gone away from what they call the starting parks, but there are still field fillers, if you will, that aren't out there as competitive as other teams. And I think we're going to see that gap, especially with the next-gen car and the amount of interest we have at the Cup level. And, again, there is so many spots at that table. So seeing some of these guys going to the Xfinity Series, if it is Matt DiBenedetto going back down there, Daniel Hemric, I think we'll find another ride. I'm trying to think who the other one, Race Hub, they mentioned. It wasn't Newman. Somebody else talking about getting a full-time ride that was questionable after this year. But so as they spread out, seeing that, I think, is good for all the series.
I 102% agree with you. I think it is good for the series. And we've seen drivers hanging on a little bit longer in the series. To see some of the stars of the NASCAR come down to that series, like a Justin Allgaier that came down from the Cup Series. And look, he's contending for championships now. And I think that's been one of the best things that could have happened. I like that it's still a feeder series into the Cup Series, but I think, and I think it's good for not just the Xfinity Series, I think it would be good for the Truck Series to have some of these stars go into the Truck Series as well and race there and really be competitive with the guys. And we've seen drivers like Ron Hornaday be mentors to a lot of the Truck Series drivers. It would be great to see some of the Cup Series drivers come down into the Truck Series and be those mentors, again, in the Truck and the Xfinity Series, I should mention. And, yes, Daniel Hemric is a wonderful person. This is nothing against Daniel Hemric. It's just that when it comes down to business, those wins mean a lot when it comes to the sponsorship dollars. And I think Daniel Hemric is a wonderful, wonderful person. But Matt DiBenedetto is a wonderful, wonderful person. But I would love to see those guys, they go to the Truck Series and race in that series and be stars there. We'll see what happens. I think that I like the trend that Jay is talking about, and I hope that that trend does continue with not just people going up into the Cup Series from the Xfinity Series, but I'd like to see some of the Cup Series drivers continue their racing careers and come into the Xfinity and Cup and Truck Series. Mike, you get the final word.
Sorry, fumbling for the mute button. Anyway, not a whole lot to add on that. There's a lot of moving pieces. We're kind of at the point in the season, kind of like we were talking about last year, there's a lot of butts in the air between the three major series. And as the playoffs continue and we get a little bit closer to the offseason, we're going to start seeing some clarity in terms of who's going where and what opportunities are going to develop in terms of, for example, GMS, their Cup Series ride, or things like that. And we're going to see just how many opportunities there are for guys like Daniel Hemric or Matt DiBenedetto to potentially get another shot at those wins that haven't come so far. So I'm going to pay real close attention to it. It's always really interesting to see how these teams take shape and evolve over the years. So it's good to see, but definitely something to keep an eye on.
Okay, let's go ahead and do our roundtable now. Hopefully we won't get cut off. I'm just kind of alerting people in case we do get cut off. Let's go ahead and start with Mike.
Sure. It's Mike_Ozell on Twitter, Mike_O on Reddit. Not sure what my availability is going to be. I think I'm going to end up having a work conflict for next week's shows. And then I get my schedule for the month of October here at the end of this week. So we'll see what's going on, but keep an ear out for me. This isn't the last you've heard of me.
Okay. Yay.
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, Mopar MJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm just looking forward to some Mountain Dew. And the question, Sharon, so we can be clarify on next Wednesdays, it's 10 Eastern, 9 Central, just to make sure nobody else is late like myself.
That is correct, Jay. Yeah, I was like, this isn't like Jay to be this late. So you were part of my multitasking today.
Well, I got away with it today because it's my birthday. Next week's not my birthday, so
right.
I don't know if I can get away with it next week.
It is 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central time. So, again, we will release the podcast as soon as we're finished, probably early afternoon, and get it out there as quickly as we possibly can so that everybody can hear it before the races begin on Thursday night. I am Banff Racing Site on Twitter. Oh, wait a second. Did you do your round table thing, Jay?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I am Banff Racing Site on Twitter and Banff Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including BanffRacing.com, and that's where we'll be putting up this flyer as soon as we're done here. And, again, we're looking forward to the weekend of racing. It's a big, big, big weekend of racing, and I'm going to be glued to my TV all weekend to watch all of these races starting on Thursday night. So thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We do appreciate you, especially during these days that we're doing the podcast, for tuning into the podcast and to hearing what we have to say. And, of course, to our Banff Racing crew, Mike Orzel and Jay Huseman for being here today to help with the podcast. And we'll look forward to Monday night and next Wednesday night for our show. So thank you, everybody. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you on the other side.
See ya.
See ya.
Good night, everybody.